I appreciate very much everybody being here. It's a little unusual. I've never done this before. And we should never have to do such things again. It's really not a mere Esrim Shana. So, this is in a shiva, people come, you know, few people come at a time. And you get to sit in closer quarters, which I almost wish, you know, maybe let's make this, they set this up for a movie. No movies. Maybe we could, like, sit a little closer, maybe shift around the chairs so it's like not so I really, really appreciate everybody being here and everybody's interest and their desire to be Menachem Oval last week and or whatever, the week before last and now. So I figure I'll tell you a little bit about my father. I'll tell you his story. My father lived, Baruch Hashem, a very long life. I think by anybody's standards, he lived to 89 and a half to the day. 89 and a half. He was born in Chof Aleph Elul of Chof Resh Pei Zion, 21st of Elul in 1927. And he passed away on the 21st of Adar of Chof Shinayin Zion of 2007, the 21st of Adar of 2017. 89 and a half years to the day. And that's Baruch Hashem. It's a long life. I told people, you know, when you buy a car, you can get a car which has 50,000 miles on it. They say highway or city. My father lived 89 and a half city. Because he was through the works. I mean, he was in the Holocaust. He was in a very difficult place. And, you know, even, you know, part of my father, not all of you, a bunch of you, I'm sure, met my father. Many of you met my father over the years. And I'm sure many of you saw him in recent years. So I had a very difficult time walking, which is a combination of factors. One of the factors was his feet started to fall apart, literally collapse from problems from the Holocaust years, you know, nutrition issues and other issues, and so it's really remarkable, and very grateful. He was very grateful, and we were very grateful that he lived that long. It's a long life, like, especially with that kind of wear and tear. We were very grateful, Baruch Hashem, and he was very grateful. He didn't take it for granted. So my father was born in a place called Gross Vardain. Gross Vardain was, it's an area that switched hands. In fact, it had three names. Gross Vardain means a big fortress. It was also known as Oradea. It was also known as Nodvarda, I think, or whatever it was, something like that. We would call it Romania. Transylvania. People who aren't vampires come from there too. And my father was born there in 1927. And my father, I'm Moshe ben Binyamin, then Moshe ben Binyamin, then Moshe. We, Baruch Hashem, broke the quote-unquote the curse. I have no children, Baruch Hashem, after my father. I hope one day to have grandchildren named after my father. but they were all one after the other. And he was born to parents. His father lived in Gross Verdein. His grandfather lived there for a period of time in Gross Verdein. And they were Ashkenazim. They were Ashkenazim. They were not Hasidim, but they had a very close connection to Hasidus. In fact, the Vizhnitzer Hasidus was displaced after the First World War. They had to move from Vizhnitz, and they wanted to come to Gross Verdein. And it was an Ashkenazish community, and they didn't want Hasidim. They thought it would make the neighborhood change. And my father's father, Moshe, after whom I named, he said, come on, you know, and he arranged for them. He got property, a large property for them and arranged for them to come. So my father was born there and he grew up there. He grew up really very, very close to the Vizhnitzer Hasidus, the Vizhnitzer Rebbes. It was always something which was very, very dear to him throughout his life. I mentioned, I know many of you watched the funeral for my father, and how connected my father was to Vizhnitz and to the Shabbos of Vizhnitz, to the Zmiris of Vizhnitz. It came from growing up like that and being right next to them, and they had an ongoing, lifelong connection. When I was a child, my father used to travel to Eretz Yisrael almost every year. My father was in his rabbinate, and he worked for Mizrahi. He worked very hard for Eretz Yisrael in his life. And whenever he would go to Eretz Yisrael, he would go for 2 weeks. It wasn't like nowadays where you jump over for a couple of days and come back. He went for 2 weeks, and he always would spend one Shabbos in Vizhnitz by the Rebbe. And my father was a clean-shaven person his whole life. Because of this, you know, when my father would walk in, I have Hasidish cousins, and I have Nidid Yamaka cousins. My father's brother is Hasidish, and his sister was not. And his sister, my cousin told me that when he came one time, his mother's friend Rebbe said to him, "You have to go for." When he was a kid, he said, "You have to go for Shabbos with Uncle Yumi to Bnei Brak to the Rebbe. Right, you're going up here with the Yekis. You have to see what a Hasidish Shabbos is like." So he said he went to Bnei Brak with my father for Shabbos, and my father walked into the Tish. You know, all these Hasidim all over the place, crowded, and they spotted him. They said, "Oh, Rebbe Binyamin Haller came," and they put him. The Rebbe was sitting here. They put him right behind. That was the connection. They had a very strong connection. They had a mutual love and appreciation all the time. So he grew up there. My father grew up there for the first few years of his life. At a certain point, yet in his childhood, they moved to a place called Gura Hamor, which was a very nice town in Bukovina, which is a different province, again, largely in Romania. They moved there because my grandfather was having challenges with Parnosa, in business. And my great-grandfather, whose name I also carry, his name was Yisrael Wagner, my great-grandfather had a lumber business. He had a successful lumber business. I made some pictures because, again, in a smaller show you can show people pictures. But I hope I'll get them back sometime. this is my father's. These are my father's parents. You can pass it around. They moved to Gura Hamor, where my great grandfather. Was a successful lumber merchant. He was my great-grandfather, Israel Wagner, a very fine person. And he said, "Let them come here, I'll help them." He made him a foreman of one of his factories. And it was min hashamayim that they did that for two reasons. First of all, the Jews from Gross Verdein were sent to Auschwitz. the Jews from Gur Amor were sent to Transnistria, which is where my father was. I'll tell you about it later. Which was, you know, wasn't the lowest level of hell. It was a little bit higher up. So they did better that way. The other thing that was Minas Shemayim was that when my father was 10 years old, his mother died. Very soon. Literally, he went to school one day. You know, she saw him after school. She went to the grocery store. She had stomach pains and had to come back home. And it turned out that she had an ectopic pregnancy. And by the time they got her to the hospital, which was a distance away, it was you know, villages. By the time she got to the hospital, it was too late to operate, and she died. She died overnight. So as soon as she died, almost as soon as she died, my father's grandparents invited their son-in-law with his three young children. My father was the oldest; he was 10, and they invited him to come and live with them. And my great grandparents raised my father and his siblings as if they were his children. So it was good that they were right next door. It was good that they were already living there. It made that much easier for that to be able to happen. Although, of course, it wasn't easy. It was a terrible, traumatic thing that one wouldn't wish on anybody. Rahmana Litzlan, it was very, very difficult. But that was that. When my father was 11 years old, he was sent to learn in yeshiva. He was sent to learn in the Hasidic yeshiva, in the yeshiva of Seret Vizhnitz, which wasn't terribly far away, but it was away from home. And he went there and had tremendously fond memories of his time there in the yeshiva and his connection to Seret Vizhnitz, which maintained to this day. He dedicated a classroom in the Seret Vizhnitz yeshiva, which is today in Haifa, and remained very, very connected to them. Very connected to them. But then the war broke out. The war broke out. The war came to the area, I should say. The war was already broken, but the war came to the area. And my father had to come home. They were sent home, and he went home, and was back there at home after a couple of years of learning in yeshiva, slightly beyond bar mitzvah. I found my mother wanted me to go through my father's talisos and tefillin right after shiva. I'm not sure of all things that was what she wanted. I went through it. I found his bar mitzvah tefillin. So really, it's something I have. Took a picture of it on my phone. I didn't print it, but you see, it's a big tefillin, and it says on it, you know, his name, Tovshin Ayin, from his bar mitzvah. And then the war broke out, and my father and his father and his brother and sister and his grandparents were sent together with the Jews of Bukovina on trains. My father got on a train on one of the infamous trains on Hashanah Rabbah 1941, and they were sent to a place called Transnistria. If you go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, as part of a standing exhibit, they have a video of those trains. It shows the evacuation or the expulsion of the Jews of Bukovina in September or October 1941, the fall of 1941. You see, I didn't see my father. I'm not going to be so dramatic. I didn't see my father in one of the pictures, but they have footage of that. And they went to Hashanah Rabbah. They went to a place called Transnistria. Transnistria translates as Transniester. There's a river, the Niester River, which is on the southern edge of the Ukraine. This area, Transnistria, was in the Ukraine, which doesn't have the climate of Hawaii, and they were there from 1941 to 1945. They were liberated in 1944 by the Russians, but they couldn't leave right away. and Transnistria, my father always said to us, he said it was like a ghetto. So see, my father didn't have a pathological kind of a need to suppress and not say anything. He was just a very sunny personality. My father was a very happy person. He was blessed to be a very happy person. And as I mentioned this morning, Achtoy v'chesed yidufuni kol yamei chayai. He said, but goodness and kindness pursued me all the days of my life. And besides having to move, because his father didn't have parnasa, and lose his mother at 10 and go to yeshiva at 11 and be banished. Besides for that, everything was great. Achtoy v'chesed yidufuni. So my father was a very sunny personality, and he didn't want to talk about... It wasn't, again, like suppression or something. You know, he made a tape for Yad Vashem and everything else, but he didn't want to talk about the gruesome stuff. He said it was like a ghetto. It wasn't urban. It was Ukraine, what it sounds like. And 70%, 75%, depends, you look at the statistics in different places, approximately 70, 75% of the people who went there didn't come back. There was no food. There was disease. People died of all kinds of things. And what my father never told us, he said he would gather wood. That was the most he would say. He would gather wood. So I have an uncle, my father's younger brother, who's 85, who was at the levaya, was at the funeral, Baruch Hashem, not so well. And he came the first night. He was in Bnei Brak. He came the first night to sit shiva with us in the house after the funeral. So we were priming him for, tell us something. So he told us something which my father never said. My mother didn't even know. He said, yeah, they did gather wood. They had to, the bridges over the Niester River were blown up, as happens in wartime. They were strategic assets. They were blown up. And they wanted the Jews to rebuild the bridges. So they were not gathering wood like you would. When my father said gathering wood, you figure, somebody's making a campfire. They were gathering, they were schlepping huge beams. And my uncle said, my father was a yeshiva bacher. He was let me see what I can show you here. My father was a yeshiva bacher, and this is a nice picture. Actually, I have four copies of it. I don't know why. The Walgreens, they gave me too many. But you look at that picture. This is a picture from after the war. It's the same. Two of the same. It's a picture from after the war. My father sitting with the Vision Sereb and Marienbad. And my father was a thin fellow with glasses. He looked like a yeshiva bacher. And a German officer who was in charge, my uncle said, thought that he was a perfect person to pick on. And so he had it in for my father there. And he had him schlepping the heaviest beams. My uncle said my father would come back at the end of the day, sachut. And they were building a bridge. To build a bridge, you have to have... foundation, so they dug a big foundation. They wanted to pour a foundation, and got filled up with water. It got filled up with water. So they made a bucket brigade of the Jews, and they put one person has to go scoop it out and pass it to the next person, next person, next person. You're supposed to dump it at the end. So the German officer put my father at the end of the line, and he told the second last person in the line, he says, "You, when you get the bucket of water, dump it on him." That was the sadism but my father never said a word about this to anybody, to any of us. But that was the kind of stuff that they went through, and they didn't have it was a very very it was rough. This is why the Holocaust has a well earned reputation. It was not, the blessing was, it was not a concentration camp. Even with that, it wasn't a concentration camp. They had some kind of communal life of their own. In that sense, it was like a ghetto. They had some kind of communal life. They lived in a room in a house, you know, a whole bunch of people together, the whole family, grandparents, grandchildren, and they were considered fortunate ones, so that there were significant people who came and they invited them to stay in their room, to stay in their house. My father said that you know, the Sarah Tereba stayed in their house for 6 weeks because he was traveling. He was just whatever, wandering around. He had been taken by the police, and when my father saw him with his brother, you know, decades later, he said, "Did you two resolve the argument over the blanket?" Yeah, you know, because that was, you know, they were freezing cold, and that was what it was. And yet, my father had very, very positive, wonderful experience memories from there. One is a story which I said at the funeral. Forgive me for repeating it for those who heard it already, but it's a beautiful story, and it's a story which was formative for my father in his life. I only heard it from him once, twice. But it was formative. He learned there was a Yid, Rav Yosef Naftali Stern, who was from the family of Chassam Sofer, and he stayed with them, and my father learned with him hours every day. When they were able to, he learned with him hours every day. And I said the story, forgive me again for repeating it, but they finished learning, and he said, "Okay, it's time for supper." Closed the Gemara, he said, "It's time for supper." Then he said to my father, who was known then as a child as Yumi, my father was Harav Binyamin, he said, "Yumi, do you have something to eat for supper? There's something at home for supper?" He said, "No, not really." So he said, "Okay," open up the Gemara, he says, "Now we're going to have another page of Gemara for supper. That's going to be our supper." And that's what they did. I say a story many times here in Shul, in this room on Shavuos, when we're finishing the Yontiv, and we sing the song, Hadyaspen Yisrael, when the Jewish people sit and they engage in the joy of Torah, Hashem says, L'pamalya Dilei, Kutcha Bichon, Hashem says to His heavenly court, "Look at my children, that they forget, Tzara Dilhoin, the Mishtakin, Tzara Dilhoin, they forget their own pain, to ask Him the Chedvos Adili, and instead they engage in my joy. Look at my children, look what they're doing." And to me, you know, next to that line in the Zohar, there would be a picture of these people sitting there and learning of Lach Gemara for supper in under those conditions. You know, my father, there was a Rosh Yeshiva from Vizhnitzer, Yaakov David Vizhnitzer, who also passed through and was with them for a period of time. And my father, he said, "We learned Bi'iyun Rav Simen Kuf Ayin Zayin, and further Hilchos Netilas Yadayim, the laws for washing." So we learned it like to the greatest depth, the laws of Netilas Yadayim. That's what he was learning there. And my father remembered whatever, you know, his postcards were what he learned where. That was the way it was. And that's what they did. And these were his memories. I mentioned at the funeral the story of the Sarah Tereba being with them for the Seder, and they sang. He taught them a nigun for Chasal Sidur Pesach, which you say at the end of the Seder, and you say, "We did what we're supposed to do, as we were privileged to make the Seder, we should be zeiche to make and to offer the Korban Pesach, the Shana Avod Yerushalayim." That's what you're all familiar with it, at the end of the Seder, Nirtza. And he said they sang it for hours, and they danced for hours, Chasal Sidur Pesach. And this is just an interesting little thing. So we were. I said this story at the funeral. So my cousins, my Hasidisha cousins, who were there, my uncle's sons, said to me at the Shiva house afterwards, "So what was the niggin?" So I said, I sang the niggin. It's a nice niggin with many different movements in it. And my uncle said, no, wasn't the niggin. That wasn't the niggin. I said, "So what was the niggin?" So he sang a niggin for Chasal Seder Pesach that I never heard. So I was puzzled. Because first of all, if my father knew both nigunim, then he would have taught me both nigunim. And if he got mixed up between this one and that one, okay, it's possible. But I never heard the other one. It's not possible that my father would have a Seder nigun like that and I never would have heard it. So I didn't really, and my father just didn't forget those kinds of things. He didn't forget. And this was his younger brother. So a couple of nights later, a representative of the Seder Vision Sereva came to be Menachem Mogel. So he was looking at the pictures that we have. My father had beautiful pictures from the warriors. And then he said, then I told him the story. So I said, you know what, can I ask you a question? He says, we had an argument about which niggun. So he says, tell me, what niggun do you think it is? So I sang a few bars. He says, that's the niggun. Your father was right. That is the niggun we still sing in Seret for Chasal Siddur Pesach now, 75 years later. That's the tune which we do. So he didn't forget the tune. Father was right. But that again is that was, you know, there's a point I tried to make when I said about Ezra that my father was very infused with the study of Torah and with Nigunim and Zmiris, you know, like the taste. He was very batam. He was very filled with the taste and the flavor of Yiddishkeit. My father was frum. But what I'm saying is he wasn't frum in the sense that, okay, now I need to learn. Now I need to sing Zmiris. Now I need to do this. It came out. It spilled out. It spilled out. One of his colleagues, one of my father's colleagues, came to be Menachem Mogel, came to visit us, came in a wheelchair. And also, late 80s, 90s, who knows. He was a rabbi who, not from those days, but from whatever my father's 30s, 40s. He was a rabbi also. Very, very fine man. It was a very meaningful sort of visit. So he said what I think was the best characterization. He said, your father was a natural Talmud Chacham. He didn't like say, okay, I have to prepare and say this. It just flowed out of him. It just flowed out of him. And that was the way it was. And it was because of these kinds of, he had the fortune to grow up in such a situation. I say the fortune to grow up, even though it was so difficult in so many ways, but it was, you know, it was Torah Shalomadati Ba'af. It was a faith that he absorbed under very, very, under very difficult circumstances, and it was mamash absorbed. It was completely absorbed. So they were there. They were liberated in 1944. I remember my father once telling me a story. No, I don't think he told it to me. I think he said it on the Yad Vashem tape, which I haven't seen in years. But on the Yad Vashem tape, he said that when they were liberated, so the Russians said, "Okay, here are your captors. Get back at them." And they couldn't do it. They like the Russians were yelling, "Why aren't you hitting them? Why aren't you punching them?" They couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. But he was there. They were there for another year. My father's family that was there, my father's father survived, his brother, Lairach Yamim Vishonim, survived, his sister, who passed away many years ago, survived them. His grandfather, after the war, but before they left Transnistria, was succumbed to typhus. And he was buried there in Mogilev. That was the area in Transnistria. And he was buried there. And in 1945, they went back home, what was then home. First they went to the place I mentioned before, where my father grew up, but my grandfather was not comfortable there. Remember, that wasn't his original home. And they went back to Grossvardein in Transylvania. And they resettled there temporarily. The Vision Sereva went back there too. Others were there. The famous Diane Weiss was in Grossvardein as well after the war. He was a personal friend of my father, the Minchas Yitzchak. And my father went to learn in the yeshiva in Margareten. Also, Margareten Rav. And again, my father remembered his 80th birthday. He was talking about it. And we learned there, Simon Yud Zayin, the last prokim of Yavamas, we learned Agunas. They learned the sugya of Agunas. Aguna in the classic, you know, we have this craziness of Agunas that we have nowadays, but in the classic times, Aguna was the woman whose husband had disappeared and we didn't know whether he was alive or dead. And after the Holocaust, of course, that was a huge issue. And the head of the yeshiva, the Mariatz, the Margaret Nerov, was a Pesach. And so he had the yeshiva. They were learning these sugyas. And they learned them very exhaustively. Simon Yozayin is one of the longest simonim in Shulchan Aruch, in the whole Kodesh Jewish law. And they learned that together. And then my father had to run again because he turned 18. Wow. He turned 18 in 1945. And he was drafted by the Romanian army. So, you know, what did they say just when you thought it was safe? You know, he survived the Holocaust, and he got to go back home, and then he gets drafted by the Romanian army. So he had to run again, and he had to leave his family. This time he had to leave his family, and he ran first to Hungary, and then to Czechoslovakia, to Prague, where he was for a short time in the yeshiva, and then he heard that there was a yeshiva, a small yeshiva for survivors in Marienbad. Marienbad was a resort town in Czechoslovakia. Just as a note for people who are historically inclined, it's a famous town for Jews because the great assembly of Agudas Yisrael before the war was held there. Lots of people call it Marienbad. My father lived there. It was Marienbad. That was the way it was pronounced. It's spelled I-E. So it's not Marienbad, it's Marienbad. But he lived there. He was in that yeshiva after the war. And it was a small yeshiva of survivors. And he encountered there many, many great people. Because it had been the site of the great assembly, and then they had a little small meetings. They had like a Knessias Hachana, I think they called it, for the Agudas Yisrael, for the regrouping of, you know, to deal with the refugees, the survivors, and everything. And they all came there again to Marienbad. When I was, before I left Sunday afternoon last week in Eretz Yisrael, I was going through a couple of files of my father, and I found two tickets to the Aguda, to the Knessia Ktan of 1946 or whatever it was, there in Marienbad, in the file. And he met there many great people, many Gedolei Yisrael. My father had, when I was growing up, he had a shas, and next to the shas there was a tall, thin Gemara Kiddushin, and it was printed by the Vad Hatzolah, by the Committee of Rescue. They printed Gemaras for people after the war. Ironically, my wife's grandfather, Rabbi Rosenberg, was involved in printing those Gemaras. And my father spent a couple of weeks walking in the forest of Marienbad with Rabbi Avram Kalmanovich, who was the president. He was a rav in Europe, and he was the president of the Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn, and he was one of the leaders of Hatzolah in America. He was the one who would go to Washington to the offices and he would faint. That was his faint. He was a very emotional person. He would plead with the officers and he would faint. A big tall man with light green, my father said he would walk with him in the forest, and my father would read from the Gemara, and our Rav Ram would say to him, you know, deep explanations, teachings. They walked for a couple of weeks in the forest. I don't know where that Gemara is. I think when my parents moved there to Israel, my father treated these things as a matter of fact. Like for me, like these are treasures. I think he left the Gemara there. I've just been trying to track it down well before my father's passing, but not successfully as yet. But that's what he did. I mean, met many, many Gedolei Yisrael. We have all kinds. I passed down that one picture. We have all kinds of pictures which are treasured pictures of him walking in the streets of Marienbad with many different Gedolei Yisrael. And many of them wanted to give him papers to come. But he got papers from Rav Avram Kalmanovich to come to. They wanted him to have papers to come to New York, to the Mir Yeshiva. My father didn't have a passport. He was shtatlaus. You know, he had run away. He was in the wrong country. He didn't have a passport. And he was offered papers by Rav Zeidel Smiatitsky. He was the head of Schneider's yeshiva in London. I don't know if the Radins are here, but Mr. Radin went to that yeshiva after he survived the war. But again, he couldn't get there. I don't know how it was solved ultimately, but there was someone else named Rav Avram Aaron Price, who was a genius of the Talmud Chacham. He was a student of the Avnei Nezer, the Sofet Shavar Goyen, and he lived in Toronto. The Avnei Nezer had two genius Talmidim in America. One of them was Rabbi Forschlager, who lived here in Baltimore, and one of them was Rabbi Price, who lived in Toronto. If you look at the book that they just published about Rabbi Forschlager, he has a lot of correspondence with Rabbi Price. And Rabbi Price offered him papers. At first, my father couldn't go, wouldn't go. But then, in 1948, the communist revolution came stronger to Czechoslovakia. My father said, he realized he had to leave, and he left. And he went to Toronto. Another just interesting little note is that he had here a simcha, the Loeb's, Jam and Blumi Loeb, married off a daughter many years ago, and her husband's name is David Kelman, and his grandfather, Rav Avram Kelman, who's from Toronto, was here for the Simcha, and he said, hello, he said, you're Rabbi Hauer from Montreal's son? I said, yes. He said, I did the paperwork to get your father out of Europe. I did the paperwork to get your father out of Europe. And, the truth is, we always said, Rabbi Price got my father out of Europe. We were sitting Shiva, and Avram and Sharon Kowalski came to be Menachem Oval. Sharon Kowalski is the daughter of Avram Kelman. So I said, ah, right? Because when he said it to me, I hugged him. You did the hard work to get my father out. And through that, something fascinating was revealed. They said, oh, really? They just came, we're friendly from Baltimore. Your father was by Rabbi Price in Toronto. Yeah, really got smicha there? Yeah, he got smicha. I said, my mother's not looking. I'll take the smicha. I'll show you the smicha. I went into my father's office, and I told him, the smicha hanging on the wall. I took down the smicha. I showed him, the genuine article signed by Rabbi Price, by Rav Hirshhorn, who was the Avesdin in Montreal, and Rav Stolman, who was the Avesdin in Detroit. That's the way they did it back then. Three signatories. And he said, when did your father get smicha? I said, I'm not sure. I looked down. This is smicha. It says, Toronto. Chof Aleph Adar. Chof Shin Yud Gimel. Chof Aleph Adar is the date of my father's yotzei. I said this. I showed my mother. My mother, she trembled. And it was spooky. It's a spooky thing. I'm not a big mystic. I don't usually, but... when you see these things, you get a sense that there's actually a plan in the world. Things aren't just happening. And for my father, who, as I said before, his slogan was "Ach Toiv Chesed Yudufuni Chol Yemei Chayei," because he was born on Chof Aleph Elul. That was a meaningful thing. A picture of it. So that was that, and he was there. He became, when he was 25, so he got to Canada when he was 21 in 1948, and when he was 25, he finished, he got a smicha, and he also got a degree from the University of Toronto, which is also an interesting story. He didn't know English, but they had a program for immigrants. As long as you knew English, you could get into university. My father didn't know English, but he said, give me a book. And they handed him a book, and he read to them from the book, perfectly in English. He had no idea what he was reading. But he was European. He was very bright. He was very good with languages. Europeans, there's a country every few blocks. So, with a different language. So he knew languages. So he was able to read. And he got into the University of Toronto. He got a bachelor's in philosophy from the University of Toronto. And he became a rabbi when he was single. My father was a very, very eligible bachelor. If you know people from that period, ask them about my father. They know that he was a personality and Levedic and Baruch Hashem. But he became a rabbi. He became a rabbi of the Polish Shul in Toronto, which was a big shul in a neighborhood that had turned somewhat. It became like the Chinatown of Toronto. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky had been the Rav there in the shul when he first came, and my father was the Rav there, and he was a successful Rav, and a few years later, my mother, who was this whole separate story, she should be well. My mother was introduced. My mother came from Eretz Yisrael. My mother ran away from Hungary in 1943, miraculously, she and her parents. And she went there to Israel, and she came for a year to teach at Central High School in New York. And she was introduced to my father by her cousin, by an esteemed cousin of hers who was an admirer of my father. And they got married. They got married in 1957 in Toronto. And they had their children in Toronto. I was born in Toronto. And shortly after I was born, my parents moved to Montreal. And in Montreal, my father started off not as a pulpit rabbi. My father worked as the National Executive Director of Mizrahi of Canada. Mizrahi was then a very significant organization, movement. And it was an interesting thing, because when my father was single, he was very active in Tzeirei Agudat Yisrael. He would speak at all the Tzeirei conventions. He was like buddies with these, like the Mike Tress and these, this Chevra. He would introduce with Moshe Feinstein and Blazer Silver when they spoke at these things. But then he went to work for Mizrahi. My father had the connection of my father and his family here at Israel is very interesting. Very, very interesting. I'll tell you about it perhaps in a few minutes if I can keep concentration. He worked for them, he would travel all over the place. And then he became rabbi of a shul, a large shul in Montreal. The shul was called Chevra Kadisha B'nei Jacob. It was a merger of two shuls, a B'nai Jacob and a Chevra Kadisha. Now, Chevra Kadisha is a funny name for a shul. I say, usually you go to cemeteries, you see names of shuls. His shul, you went to the shul, you found the name of the cemetery. But it was a shul which was presumably built out of some kind of a burial society. Chevra Kadisha B'nai Jacob in Montreal. There were a lot of weddings there. All the firm weddings in Montreal where there was a huge place, and they all would put, for some reason, they all put on the invitation, it'll be at the B'nai Jacob. I'm not sure. But my father was the rabbi there, and in fact, this is a picture of my father. He's probably around 60. Pictures, some newspaper took of him sitting there in the front of the shul. It was a very, very large shul. Its constituency was similar in a certain sense, like to Beth Tfilah here, let's say, for example. It was 1,000 families. The vast majority were not Shomer Shabbos. My father usually didn't have a minion of Shomer Shabbos in the shul. The same time was Montreal, so it was a mixture. When I was growing up, my father gave shir Shabbos afternoon as Gemara shir in Yiddish. His Gemara shir was in Yiddish. Many years he would give Shabbos Shuvah drushes in Yiddish. But it was lots of, that was for that crowd that came. And my father was rabbi there for 22 years, I think. And he was very beloved. As long as he didn't bring up religion. what I mean is not that. My father always brought up religion. He was very beloved. My father was a very affable, personable person. He loved people very much. He loved people. He was very gregarious. He was not very, very, very friendly. People liked him very much. But it was. He had to, so to speak, fight the Milchamas Hashem. He had to fight the battles of the Lord. He fought a battle for Mechitza in his shul. And it was very, very difficult for him. It's very difficult for him. There's a book, I don't have it here, I showed it to people at the Shiva House. There's a book called The Sanctity of the Synagogue, which was published in the 50s by a man named Baruch Litwin from Michigan, who was a fellow. At that time, all the shuls were going conservative and changing the shul and taking out the mechitza. And he was a Jew with a long beard, and he sued his shul for taking out the mechitza. And there was a big court case. They had briefs for the court from Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik and Rav Aaron Kotler and Rav Moshe Feinstein, all kinds of things about the importance of mechitza. And he won. He won. And they published a book with the whole story, with all the briefs and everything else. And about 30 or 40 years ago, in the 80s, 30-something years ago, they published an updated version of the book with appendices of later stories of Mechitza. And they have a chapter called The Canadian Success Story about my father's battle against Mechitza, which technically he won. He literally won it on a technicality. As they print there in the book, two posters. There was a poster of come to a meeting about Mechitza. Exercise your right to vote no. And it was signed by someone like the language of like a communist protest. And then on the next page they have everyone is cordially invited to an educational meeting about the place whatever it is, and so a feminist view of the mechitza. This was my father's stroke of genius. There was a woman in Montreal who was a rebbetzin of a shul, of an Orthodox shul in Montreal. She wore a talis. She wore a talis. Now, in those days, women didn't wear talisim as commonly as they did now. You know, my father loved jokes. My father had a great sense of humor, so I don't feel uncomfortable interspersing here, because I don't remember if I ever told this to him, but it happened like a couple of years ago. I missed APAC because of my father's passing. A couple of years ago, last year or the year before, I was at APAC waiting to go through security, and there's this big, beefy, bald security guard who's checking everybody, and he stops the woman in front of me, and he says, "Excuse me, ma'am." She says, "Yes." He says, "Can I ask you something?" She says, "Yes." He says, "Ma'am, back when I was bar mitzvah 30 years ago, only the men wore yarmulkes. What's going on?" But this lady back then wore a talis, an Orthodox rebbetzin in a certain shul. And my father and her, there was no love lost between them. But she believed in mechitza. She believed in mechitza. So my father invited her to present about mechitza. It was a stroke of genius. And he won on a technicality. There was a rabbi in Montreal, his name was Rabbi Hirschsprung, the Kohen Levracha. Rabbi Hirschsprung was a brilliant Talmud Chacham, a Goyen Olam. He knew Shas. You know, he would ask you what you were learning, and you would say, "I'm learning the fourth parak of Yevamos." He would start reading it to you by heart, and then he'd read the whole page, and then he'd say, "Okay, Rashi," and then he would start just by heart. He was the sweetest person with a tremendous amount of Avos Yisrael, and he would always, thank you, he'd always say to my father, my father told me, he would say to my father, and excuse me for saying it over, but this is what he'd say, "Don't be stupid, stay there. If you leave, who knows what's going to happen to the shul." So my father stayed there, and it cost him his health. My father had his first heart attack almost 30 years ago, and was very connected, very traceable to the battles which he fought for Yiddishkeit as a Rav. It was not simple. My father was not encouraging me to go into the rabbinate. He was not encouraging me to go into the rabbinate. He was very happy in the end. And part of why he was happy is because it was my experience in the rabbinate is different than my father's experience in the rabbinate. Very different, Baruch Hashem. in Baruch Hashem. But my father did wonderful things in that context. There are people who of course, who he brought to Yiddishkeit and he made room, and who he just was Makad Hashem Shemayim, sanctified Hashem's name in what he did. He was a good person and a dedicated teacher of Torah. But we were very happy when he retired, because it took a toll on him. And my father retired at 65. People used to retire at 65. I don't know if some of you may remember. But people used to retire at 65. My father retired at 65. And they spent 6 months in Eretz Yisrael, my parents, to find where they wanted to live exactly. And they bought an apartment at the end of the 6 months, actually beautifully, from a close friend of theirs, from Kurt Rothschild, who should be well. And then they went back to Canada. They packed up. They sold their house. And a year and a few months after they retired, thank you, they moved to Yerushalayim. And they lived there for 23 years together. And it was amazing. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. My father had friends where we grew up. We didn't have so many friends. Again, he was friendly with people, but it was friends. And when my parents went there to Israel, my father was in better health, and he would be up early in the morning. He gave him a Mishnah Yeshir in his shul, and before davening, and then he went and he learned in a morning kollel in Heichal Shlomo for seniors. And he would go to shiurim at night, and he didn't care how old the people were who were teaching him at all. My father didn't matter. He just, if we can talk, we can talk. We can talk in learning. We can kibitz a little bit together too. All the better. It didn't matter how old you were, and that was what I remembered. I forgot this for 20 years, but I just remembered during the shiva. I had a Rebbe, I mentioned it, and I've spoken about him at shul. He just passed away this year also, Rav Moshe Shapira. So when my parents first moved to Eretz Yisrael 23-something years ago, I went to visit them. Excuse me. I went to visit them, and on Thursday afternoon, I said to my parents, I'm just going to go out for a bit. I'm going to a shir. So my father says, who's Shir? So I said, someone's a little Rebbe, my Rav Moshe Shapira. So my father said, can I come? I said, sure. So we got on a bus together, and we went to Malo Dafna, to Or Sameach. Rav Moshe Shapira used to give a Shir upstairs in Or Sameach in a double classroom, which was given the name, the Israeli-based Medrash, for whatever reason. And Rav Moshe gave the Shir in there. It was crowded. I don't think there was anybody there who couldn't have been my father's son by age. He was later, it became more famous this year, so many people came of all kinds. But that time, it was all younger people. And my father came with me. And he saw there was something good. And Monday, whenever I went home, I came back here. And I spoke to my father next week. And he said, it was a good shiur last night. My father kept going to the shiur by himself. I don't remember if it was for a year or for a year and a half or for 9 months. I don't remember exactly. But for a long time, I would go on a bus, squeeze in, find a place in this classroom. Because, hey, what did I come here for anyways? I came to Eretz Yisrael because, this is my chance. I can go, I can learn. And he came. My father was very friendly with Rav Zolti Zichrono Livracha, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. And he loved him very much. He passed away years ago. His son said shiurim in the neighborhood. My father would run to go to his shiurim, to his son. His son's a big Talmud Chacham and a very fine Magid Shir. But, it didn't matter. So he's the kid, the son, his friend's son. It didn't make a difference. If it's good, it's good. We'll take it. And he ran to go to it. And he loved it. And these were wonderful. It was wonderful years. There was someone who came from shul to be Menachem Oval, and we were talking, and he said something very true and very meaningful. And my mother was exceptionally happy to hear it. He said, what your father means to me, I remember this person came to the shul shortly after I became rabbi. And my father retired and I became rabbi at the same time, pretty much. Two different Bnei Jacobs, but whatever it was. And my father, the first Rosh Hashanah already, he came. That was the one time. First Rosh Hashanah, he retired. He came to us the first Rosh Hashanah in Kippur. And then they moved to Eretz Yisrael. And he said, whenever your father would come visit and you would ask him to speak, whether in shul or at Shal Shudas or at a simcha, he always spoke about Eretz Yisrael. And it's true. My father viewed himself as the ambassador of Eretz Yisrael. I told you before, I would tell you about his connection. And by the way, please, anyone, you need to leave. I'm overwhelmed by, I thought I was going to be speaking to a few people. I'm overwhelmed by everybody being here, and I appreciate it. And Nichamtani, you are comforting me. And if you have to leave, please, don't worry. But my father had a very interesting connection to Eretz Yisrael. I'm named after my father's father, whose name was Moshe, and his grandfather, who partially raised him, whose name was Yisrael Wagner. And his name is Moshe Yisrael. My great-grandfather, Yisrael Wagner, was in the lumber business, as I said. And one of the big parts of his business, which was, I think, a pleasure part of his business, was he sent wood for crates. He made wood crates for Jaffa oranges in the 20s. He was sent to Eretz Yisrael. And he loved Eretz Yisrael. And he bought a piece of land in Petach Tikva. In those days, Petach Tikva was a very early Jewish settlement. He bought a piece of land in Petach Tikva, and he built a house and a manserah, like a lumber processing plant, there in Petach Tikva in 1923. And his dream was ultimately to go to Eretz Yisrael. And when the war broke out, he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. What was the problem? The problem is the other person that I named after, my father's father, Moshe, he had from his father yet, and they were guardians of the faith. They came from an area, Gosfardain, there was much more, there was reform and all kinds of things, and they were very worried about the trends. And he was very, very worried about Eretz Yisrael. Secular Zionism was ravaging the frum communities in Eretz Yisrael, and he said he's not taking his children to Eretz Yisrael. And my grandmother, Bela, after whom our daughter Batsheva Bela is named, said to my grandfather Yisrael, I'm not leaving here without my grand. I took responsibility for my grandchildren when my daughter died, she said. I'm not leaving. So because he didn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael, so they didn't go to Eretz Yisrael. When my father's father did end up going to Eretz Yisrael in 1950, because they were in Gosfardain in Romania, and then that became communist, and he went with his children to Eretz Yisrael. And one of his brothers-in-law said, when he arrived, he says, I have to go see it. I have to make a shechionu with Moshe Hauer. My grandfather came to Eretz Yisrael. But he had no choice, and he came, and at that time. It was very, very interesting. But my mother had very much different feelings. My father himself was very influenced by his grandfather, as well as Yisrael. My father's was not such a kanoi, was not a zealot. And my mother dreamed of Eretz Yisrael. I think I mentioned this at the funeral, from the day that she left. My mother was always depressed on Yom Tov Sheni. On the second day of Yom Tov, which we have in Chutz L'Arts, which they didn't have in Eretz Yisrael, my mother was always sad. And she dreamed to go to Eretz Yisrael. And when it came time for their retirement, my mother was like counting the days that they would go to Eretz Yisrael. And my father, who loved Eretz Yisrael, traveled to Eretz Yisrael all the time, it was a much bigger deal for him. You know, he was less hesitant. But my mother, Baruch Hashem, prevailed and slept in Eretz Yisrael, and he felt like he was in heaven. He felt like, you know, this was what, you know, what he had been through, the road, the highway that he had traveled in his life. To come to Eretz Yisrael for him was a huge, huge gift. And he always spoke about it. Anybody who heard him speak, and even the later years when he couldn't come to Simchas, My father would always send written messages, and they always ended Yivarecha Hashem Yitzir in Reva Tuv Yerushalayim Kol Yimei Chayecha. Yivarecha Hashem Yitzir. And it was a big deal. It was very, very, very rich, and wonderful part of his life. I would say that those were the best years in a certain sense, where he didn't suffer, he didn't struggle, until he became frail. And then, but he didn't complain. He was so happy. He was so happy. Baruch Hashem. Mm-hmm. My father went to the hospital Erev Shabbos Zohar, Thursday of Shabbos Zohar. I got an emergency call. My sister in America and I got an emergency call like it was coming to an end. You know, he went to shul the day before in his wheelchair. But something happened, and Baruch Hashem, was a false alarm. It was a false alarm. He went to the hospital. It was serious, but he had become dehydrated. His Nepalese helper had a baby. His wife, they didn't even live in the same place, his wife had a baby. In fact, our family helped them. They didn't have a baby for years, and they needed help, and Baruch Hashem, we had a connection. We helped them to help them to get some treatments, and they had a baby. And he was away for a few days. And my father became dehydrated. Just the change, he became dehydrated, and his numbers were terrible. But Baruch Hashem, he went to the hospital, he was back. And he came back from the hospital on Sunday. He had Purim Suda in the house, and he spoke. He was there, and he had his grandchildren around him, and he was happy. And he was recalling, my oldest sister was born on Shushan Purim, which is Purim Yerushalayim. We have a little video of my father speaking about this momentous day. And Divrei Torah. My nephew got married a few weeks ago. My niece got married a few weeks ago in Eretz Yisrael. My mother made a Sheva Brachas in my house, so my father could be at the Sheva Brachas. My father was preparing to speak at the Sheva Brachas. He said to my mother, I want to say over something. It's a very suitable word. It goes something. It's like this. It's in a sefer from Rabbi Baron in my study. I want to look at it. My mother said, "Which sefer?" I said, "Hers is a tall, thin, black sefer." And my mother said, "There are 400 tall, thin, black sefers in your library." So the assistant wheeled my father into the library. My father, who was, he pointed exactly to where the sefer was. He said, there's a chapter in there, and this is what it's about. And he told him approximately where it was. My mother opened up. It was exactly how he remembered it. The Vort was exactly how he remembered it. My father didn't know whether it was Tuesday or Shabbos, in that sense. In other words, he would come home every night from Daf Yomi, and he would want to make Havdalah. He was just confused about little things. I mean it. He was confused about little things, like, what day is it today? It's not just like, you know, those kinds of things he would be confused about. But big things? No. A word on the parsha? My father had helpers who took him for years, Jewish helpers. He would say to them Divrei Torah on the way back. My mother said sometimes he would come home after Daf Yomi. The person would help him home. My father would say, my mother would want to have supper already. It was already 8 o'clock or 8:15. And my father would say, I need some time in my office. Why? I want to go over a few Werther for the fellow who's taking me tomorrow morning. That was what he did. Huh? That was what he did. He gushed. And he loved Torah. And he loved people. He loved people. What we had, the chizuk we had, many people from the neighborhood who came, and each one, you know, like dozens, literally, for sure, somewhere between 2 and 3 dozen people were people who had helped him with this, you know, walked him home when he could still have a regular walk home. This one sat next to him, always made sure he had the Gemara for the Daf Yomi and the Mishnah Berurah for the Halacha Shiur, and so on and so forth. And they said, I said, thank you very much for taking care of my father. They said, we loved him. He was, you know, I moved here from England, the first person who came over to me and was interested in me and said, it was your father. My father wasn't the rabbi of the shul, just a regular person, but he loved people, and people loved him. They reciprocated back. They loved him back. And it was a beautiful thing. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing. It was a beautiful person. He was a regular person. I mean, my father wasn't Rav Chaim Kanievsky. You know, he read the Jerusalem Post cover to cover too. Right? He loved to talk politics and everything else. He wasn't some kind of saintly otherworldly person. He was geschmack. He loved things. He loved Yiddishkeit. He loved Jews, and that's wonderful. That's wonderful. And Baruch Hashem, he was zeichah. He was privileged. My father had two grandsons who made Siyum Hashas in Tzahal. Right? So my nephews in Eretz Yisrael all did Hezder. You know, the combination of army service and yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. They all did that. Two of them. One of them, when he went back on Miluim, the reserves, that was when he happened to do it. And he made a Siyum Hashas. Another one, while he was still in Hezder. I remember when that one, who was still in yeshiva, when he finished, he came back to yeshiva. He was in the yeshiva Hezder in Yeruchim, and they made a big celebration for him. One of the students made a siyum on Shas on the whole Talmud. They made a celebration. And my father went. He traveled a long trip to Yeruchim. He wasn't well, and he traveled. My father was in heaven. He was in heaven. He was so excited. He was so excited. How what he did and how they celebrated it, and seeing the young Lebedekite and the Simchas Atayra, he was in heaven, and those kinds of things, you know, Baruch Hashem, the grandchildren called him on Friday. Okay, what are you learning? You know, and he would tell them the next Gemara and the Gemara before. He'd tell them the word on the Parsha, and he would finish it. He was Baruch Hashem. That was his language. That was his passion. That was his passion. I was speaking to my mother on Friday in Eretz Yisrael. You know, people put up monuments. They put up the Matzeva very quickly. Many people put it up at the end of Shiva. We didn't do that. People put it up at the end of Shloshim. Shloshim is the last day of Pesach for me. For my parents, for my mother and sisters in Eretz Yisrael, it's the day after Pesach. So we're going to do it around one of my sisters making a wedding in Israel, Lag BaOmer. So we'll do it a day or two before then. So my mother said, we have to start thinking about the Matzeva. So I said, yes, we do. I said, well, do you have any thoughts? So my mother said, I think on the top of Matzeva, it should say, Mo Ahavti Terasecha Kolayim Hisichosi. How I love your Torah all the day. That's what I talk about. And I said that's very appropriate. I said, and what I think is that at the bottom of the Matzeva, you know, you write usually, you know, Nolad, you know, he's born on Chaf Aleph Elul of Tav Resh Pei Zayin, and he was Niftar on Chaf Aleph Adar of Tavshin Ayin Zayin, it should say Abba slogan, Ach Toi V'Chesed Yedufuni Kol Yimei Chayai. Someone said to me today after davening, he said Toiv and Chesed together in Gematria is 89. Nice. Ach Toi V'Chesed Yedufuni Kol Yimei Chayai. So I'm very proud of my father. I'm very, very grateful that the Rabbanu Shalom spared him from the Holocaust so that we could exist. That he spared him not just physically, but he spared his spirit. That he remained a joyous person, mamish, a person who loved life and was happy, wasn't bitter. It's not a given. It's not a given. And that he raised us the way he raised us, with difficult circumstances, but tremendous love of family. There was never a question, and with good values. And it's a big call. I was very attached to my father, a very, very loving relationship, and it's very hard. You know, very hard thing. Very hard thing. You know, I'm a little modern Orthodox. In my house, I give brachas to my kids every Friday night, and my wife gives brachas to my kids every Friday night. My mother didn't give me brachas. She gave me brachas, but I'm saying she didn't like give me formally brachas Friday night. My father was more old school. So my wife gives brachas. I'm very happy my wife gives brachas. And you know, one of my kids was home Baruch Hashem. Teases sometimes, you know, my wife about she gives brachas. This Friday night, I said to myself, I said, I wish my mother gave brachas. I'm never going to get a bracha. You know, I got a bracha. I didn't get it every week, but when I was in Eretz Yisrael, it was a moment I look forward to. It was when I went to my father Friday night, and he stuck out his hand, and I kissed his hand, and he gave me a bracha. You know, it's a parent is something special. You know, for a million reasons, but you know, later in life, I had somebody in my life who looked forward every day to hearing from me. Who that was like in his spare time, he would think about me. So in heaven he's doing it, but I don't get to see it. It's on many layers, it's an Aveda Gedayla. Baruch Hashem, I should have my mother till 120. She's a very strong woman. But more than anything, we feel a tremendous loss. We feel tremendous gratitude. Such a rich life and surmounted so many things. And it's an achama for me to share it with you. I appreciate that you came to hear it. And as I should.
Today it's Plush to Yishara.
Huh?
It's Plush to Yishara.
Had many names.
And this panel came to see you during. It was at the Leviathan and
you. Yes. It's nice to see you. It's comforting to see you.
Thank you. Make sure you're aware.
Thank you.
I know there was a rebel in Toronto, and I don't know, my great grandfather was named after Saul Stigler.
Singer?
Stigler. No, I'm sure it's
not. No,
that was chill.
I laugh because for years people were telling me the same thing, and I'm like, gosh, he's my father's father.
I'm looking at him as such a very dear Jerusalem.
I mean, I saw your grandparents very nice things.
Awesome opportunity. Very amazing man. Comforted.
Amazing.
Thank you. Remark.
He had some of the same struggles that my sister.
Yeah.
Grabbing into that time was really hard.
A lot of hard.
Yeah. I don't buy you that much.
Well, my father would have given that. Somebody asked me to calculate what you actually
Thank you.
was the other person.
Oh,
really?
Forgive me if I don't watch everything I convert. But I don't even remember.
Yeah, well, it's special. Yeah, that was very special.
You don't like
seeing
you.
We're
not
it's weird, but the overwhelming feeling